2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, here to break down the Colorado Rockies system today. And to do that, we're joined by Tracy Ringlesby, longtime Rockies beat writer. Tracy, the Rockies are in kind of an interesting position. Amazing how much things can change in just a year. When we spoke this time last year, the Rockies were coming off their second straight postseason appearance. First time in franchise history they made back-to-back playoff appearances. They had the most homegrown players of any postseason team, a really, really good homegrown core. Things seem to be looking up. This past year, the wheels completely fell off. A lot of pitchers took steps back. Injuries really took a toll on the team. They fell to 71-91, fourth place in the NL West. They were in last place for most of the year. And the offseason has brought some turmoil. Nolan Arenado trade rumors, some discord between him and the front office. It seems like things have really taken a turn for the worse, at least from the outside looking in. How do you kind of assess where the Rockies are and just how this past year has gone and the fall of it, if you will?
Well, I think the one thing that they've done is they haven't panicked. And, you know, things haven't gone well. And you can look at them and say that, you know, hey, this is a team that finished one game out of last place. What are they trying to do? And I think what they look at it and they say, you know, to start with, they had the whole core of their team, there's one guy over 30 that's a, you would call a core member of the team, and that's Charlie Blackmon. And that includes the pitching, you know, the rotation. And what happened last year was they got killed with injuries. And in fact, I think John Gray and Herman Marquez both took major steps forward. But when you've only got two guys in the rotation that you really look to and say that, you know, these are the guys that are going to carry us, it becomes a problem. Because, you know, this is a franchise that they had six pitchers make 13 or more starts two years ago, right? They had, you know, four of those guys had 30 or more starts. You know, they had you know, five guys basically who were their rotation in 2017. Last year they had 11 guys start, and they had, you know, get hurt. Now, I think Marquez had everything. Had they been in contention, Marquez undoubtedly would have come back and pitched in September. But I think at that point they didn't see any reason to push him any farther. They felt he'd come forward quite a bit. You know, Gray suffered a broken ankle, you know, broken leg. Well, so what are you going to do about that? And I think the guy that really threw him for a loop and has really become a project this winter has been getting Kyle Freeland back to where he needs to be. Won 1-0 in the opening game of the season, and he went 2-11 the rest of the way and spent some time in the minor leagues, spent some time on the injured list. But in their mind, when they look at their team and they say, you know, look, Marquez and Gray really grew a lot as far as their aggressiveness and their ability to work through situations. I mean, Gray went from 2 years ago when he got sent to the minor leagues briefly. If you look at his breakdown, he had 19 starts where he allowed three or fewer runs. And in those starts, his ERA was like 2.93. He had 13 starts where he allowed more than three runs, and his ERA was 9.87. And it was the inconsistency, the inability to shut down a big inning that got to him. Last year, he gave up three runs in an inning once, and it was a big growth to him. Pedro Astacio talked to him in spring training about, you have to understand, the only thing that matters is that you don't give up the next run, right? Because you can't take runs off the scoreboard. Don't overreact to that. Don't push yourself too hard. So I think they feel that the biggest problem they had last year dealt with the rotation, not having the consistency, not being able to pitch the innings that they counted on them from previous years. Now, this is a team that 2 years ago they had four guys go over 170 innings. That's unheard of nowadays, right?
Very, very rare. And one thing, when you look at the Rockies as their roster stands today, it's really still a lot of the same guys that got them to the playoffs in 17-18. You mentioned Marquez, Gray, Senzatella, Freeland, all still there in the rotation. look at the lineup, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story. We saw some young guys step up. Ryan McMahon showed some good things last year. David Dahl continued to show good things when he was healthy. Garrett Hampson looked like he turned a corner a little bit at the end of the year. Sam Hilliard came up and gave them a boost. There's still a lot of talent on this team. I think the question just seems to be health, and then what's the real Rockies, the 17-18 version or last year's version?
Yeah, I think they'll look at it and say, as young as they are still, that it obviously was 17 and 18 in their minds. It's one thing you say, well, we're going to do a major rebuild. Well, when all your key players are under 30, you've got the rebuild in the process, right? It's not like this is a team that got old and needs to worry about what's going to happen. I mean, you've got one more year. You've got a few older players like Desmond, but his contract goes down extensively in these next 2 years. And you've got young players coming along that are looking at to move into a position like a Hilliard, who was a great find in the draft for them. I mean, he's a guy that's a big, strong power hitter that can play center field, very athletic, and was a pitcher to his junior year in college. A lot like Blackman in that regard. Blackman was what did he throw 18 innings as a relief pitcher his junior year at Georgia Tech, and then he went to play summer ball and told the manager that he was an outfielder because his arm was hurt and he couldn't pitch it, but he wanted to play winter ball. And so they've had guys like that over time that come on. I mean, Story was a guy that they got laughed at for taking in the second round, and now he's probably the best shortstop in the National League. So I just think from their mind, their standpoint, if people are going to start trying to trade prospects, I mean, Arenado wants to be traded, that's fine, but they want somebody back that's going to make them a better team. They're not looking to say, well, we're just going to start unloading people at this point. And I think they have a reason to stay that way. Now, if we get to the All-Star break and they fall apart like they did last year, let's remember they were right in the middle of everything until the All-Star break last year, and then they had a horrible July. And one of the complaints that you hear is, well, they didn't do anything leading up to the trading deadline. Well, when you're in number eight in the battle for a wild card spot, how much are you going to give up at the trading deadline, right? You take a step back and you say, okay, let's we got to get regrouped. And I think out of what happened last year, they came up with a guy that I think will be asleep this year that people will know because he was a number one draft pick, but Chichi Gonzalez. His last four starts last year, his velocity was back to 95. His breaking ball had a sharp break even at Coors Field. He didn't pitch for 2 years. All of a sudden in September last year, after coming back last year, pitching most of the year at the minor league level, all of a sudden you saw him take a big step forward, and I think people know from before he was hurt the type of competitor he is and the type of person he is, and you saw his pitch selection return. So that's why I think from a stand back and be out of the middle of all the things that went on last year as far as just the record of that, there's more of a patience than outsiders may think because they do have young players. I mean, at some point this year, Brendan Rodgers will be ready. I probably bought the 1st of May. And all of a sudden, now you've got an impact guy that's going to step in. He had a little ups and downs last year before he got hurt. But the bottom line is he's always had that at every place he's been. And then that next year when he comes back for a full season, he's been a guy that's made the adjustments and made that step forward. And, what they have with all of those guys is versatility. They've got McMahon, who was signed as a third baseman, played first base, now he's playing second base, and played a good second base. Got Rodgers, who can play second, third, or short. You've got Hampson, who can play second, short, or center field. You just start suddenly looking at maneuverability with what you have, too. So I think there's a confidence on their part that this team's better than people think.
Yeah, you look at the young core, as we've talked about. Again, as long as Nolan Arenado's there, this is a pretty good team with a lot of talented players. I know there's been some frustration about maybe some guys playing who are older veterans that aren't that effective anymore. Ian Desmond's been at the forefront of that. But you see the pieces in place for this team to be competitive as they were as recently as a year ago. I want to dive into Brendan Rodgers and that farm system. As you mentioned, came up, made his debut as a 22-year-old. I had some ups and downs before going down with a season-ending shoulder injury, had surgery. When you were discussing with evaluators the Rockies farm system this year, Brendan Rodgers, again, he's been the number one prospect in the system for years. Was there any debate with him still being the number one prospect in the system, or was it a slam dunk?
No, I think it was pretty much a slam dunk. I think most people who look at him feel like he is where they thought he would be at this point, particularly had he not had that injury that will probably keep him out for the first month of the season. But, you know, everyone talks about, well, geez, you know, the Swanson and Bregman were drafted that same draft. Yeah, they were drafted 1-2. He was drafted 3. They were both college players. So right now, he's at the age they were their first full season in pro ball, right? You know what I'm saying? So I think to say that he didn't develop as quick as those other two, I don't think that's a fair comparison people make, because he played his college baseball in the minor leagues, if that makes sense. He's got so much ability to do things and versatility as far as where he can play. I think all of those things enter into the factor. Also, what the Rockies look for. I mean, that's, you know, they'll go to the deathbed with McMahon, because he's shown that he can even play second base at a solid big league level.
Yeah, you know, and with Rodgers, again, he was hitting very well at Albuquerque, and just, as you mentioned, came up, went through the normal ups and downs young players go through, and the injury happened. It'll be interesting to see how he comes back this year and what they end up doing, whether it's he moves to second full-time, McMahon moves to first. They have options with that versatility, and either way, there's still a lot of optimism. This is a very good player with a bright future ahead. Moving down into the system, you mentioned he was the clear-cut number one. Ryan Rolison and Michael Tolia came out numbers 2 and 3, the Rockies' last two first-round picks. Rolison 2018, Tolia 2019. Rolison made it up to high Class A Lancaster in his first year. Really showed some good things. Handled himself well in a hitter-friendly environment. Going over these two with evaluators, again, was it clear-cut? These were numbers 2 and 3 in that order. How much debate was it?
I think with Rolison, it was pretty much without question, because like you said, he went up to Lancaster, and one of the things that they've liked about him is how he's responded at each place he's been. They don't have a pitcher-friendly ballpark in their organization, and that's by design. They're one of the few teams that actually wants a hitter-friendly ballpark, because that's what the pitchers are going to face when they get to the big league level. And so why not make them aware of the things they have to do to be successful in that type of ballpark? And also the fact that you're not going to have a sub-2 ERA, okay? Don't worry about it. Get the, you know, Pedro Stacio, get the next hitter out. And I think those things worked good to his favor with Rolison, that he showed that he could still throw his curveball at those ballparks, which he can do. As Bert Hooten said, I learned how to throw a curveball in Boulder, Colorado in the summer league with Bus Campbell. I don't know why people say you can't throw a curveball at altitude. You just make adjustments. And that's what they watch with Rolison. Okay, how are you going to – your three main pitches, fastball, changeup, curveball. How are you going to adjust with that curveball as you go to these different places that aren't pitcher-friendly? And they saw that come with him. And, you know, the other thing to worry about, remember with a curveball, is that you basically have several pitches with a curveball, because you have the eye action change, but it's also an off-speed pitch, right? It's not a slider or a fastball. It's a lot of times it's not even as hard of a pitch as a changeup. So, you know, if you can stay with it and not make mistakes with it, it's a very versatile pitch, and he showed that. And I think with Tolia, there was some debate among people with he and Levine as to which way to go, and I just think he's older than Levine. He's played at a different level than Levine played in his developmental stages. Now, there's never been a New Hampshire high school position player play in the big leagues because they don't have that heavy of a schedule. And I think with Levine last year, it showed, just because he did not have the finish to the season that he would have liked to have had, right? But let's face it, he went from 20 to 25 games as a high school player, then he went to the short season, and then all of a sudden it's 5 months and 140 games, and there's just a whole middle toughness and process that you go through at that point. And so to them, they weren't worried that the numbers weren't quite what they wanted. But I think it just showed that Tagli is on a faster pace to make the move to Levine. And I don't think that speaks poorly of what they feel about him.
Yeah, Tagli did some good things at UCLA. Really got hot at the end of last year. You know, you're looking at a potential switch hitter with power, can play first, can play the corner outfield. A lot of things to like there. You hit on Grant Levine, and he and Colton Welker at number 4 and 5 were interesting simply because these were two very young kids who had shown some promising things in 2018. 2019 moved up to levels where they were still very young and struggled. Levine struggled at low Class A Asheville, as discussed, kind of the adjustment going from New Hampshire high school baseball to a full season of professional baseball was a huge one, and he had some struggles there. Colton Welker made the jump up to Double A Hartford, struggled with some injuries a little bit, but also did not have the type of season he was hoping for, and that continued into the Arizona Fall League a little bit. What were evaluators saying about these two players, specifically outside the organization, and kind of where they stand now?
Well, I think with Levine in particular, they saw he had a pretty strong first half, and then he just seemed to wear down a little bit in the grind and life in low-level A-ball. And, you know, it's a process that the physical tools they still saw with him, so they maintain confidence that he has a chance to be that first guy out of New Hampshire to make it. And they didn't really slow down on him. You know, the one thing that they really like about him, too, is for a guy that's a power-type guy and gets into maybe you think, okay, a young guy, he's going to get frustrated because he's not doing well. He still had very good plate patience. I'm having a hard time spitting out words right now. But he had the patience. He drew walks, got on base, and actually they felt like, well, maybe he just needs to be a little more aggressive. But what he really can do is he can drive the ball to left field. Doesn't feel like he has to pull everything. And, you know, when you're talking about bringing a guy to Coors Field, you like to see that power to all the fields because it's a hitter's ballpark. So why not be able to take advantage? And if you have that ability to drive the ball to left field as a power guy, you're probably going to make more contact than a lot of the big-time power hitters. I think with Welker, you know, he started off great last year and then had the shoulder subluxation. And so he's out for over a month and came back, struggled. And I think you have two things there. One, just getting everything back with your movement of your body when you have that type of injury. And two, you know, you want to make up. You want to do a month's worth of work every week, as opposed to just like, okay, I just got to get back in and relax. I'm still considered a good prospect here. I don't have to go out and I don't have to hit 1,500 because you can't hit 1,500, right? 1,000 is the best you could hit anyhow. So it was a learning experience for him. He's got the hand-eye coordination. He's a very good defensive player. I think that they look at him as a guy that, again, that's going to have multiple positions he can play in. And that's what things Billy Schmidt's scouting department really looks for. You know, let's not get ourselves locked into where this guy has to be a third baseman, or this guy has to be a shortstop. Because, as you've seen with McMahon, he played a lot of first base 2 years ago, and this last year he played a lot of second base, and he was a third baseman out of high school.
Yeah, Welker is interesting. You mentioned, you go back and you look, his first 2 months were actually pretty strong at AA. 308, 358, 510 slash line, 19 doubles, 7 home runs. You saw the power starting to come as well as the natural feel to hit. Then the shoulder injury really kind of took a toll on him. He ended up going on the disabled list in July, missed a month. And with him, it's interesting because people have seen the talent. With what he showed that first half of the season, is there a sense this could be an above-average everyday corner infielder, just because people have had some questions on the power and if it'll profile? But was that first half enough for people to become convinced on it?
I think from the Rockies' standpoint, it reinforced their feelings about him, that the ability's there, that he took that next step up in the organization, to, you know, in at Double A and handled himself. And they didn't get hung up on the fact that it took him a little while to make some adjustments when he came back. And I think a lot of that was he was having a good year when he went down, and all of a sudden he wants to have a better year when he comes back, and pushes himself a little bit too much, and it's not the try hard leg. And so I think they felt like in some ways that it was a benefit to see him have to battle somewhat at the end of the season, because what you hope you can learn more from struggles than you can from success, because when you struggle you have to start reevaluate your approach and what you're doing. And I think if everything goes too easy at times, then you see it can get to that next level and it's not as easy there and they start to panic. So but I think from the standpoint of his overall development, they're happy with where he is, and they don't see the second half of last year or the last couple months as a setback as much as a growing experience.
Sam Hilliard checked in at number 6. Again, great year at AAA Albuquerque, great major league debut. He's firmly a part of the Rockies' plans moving forward. Some familiar names on here, Ryan Castellani, Ryan Vallade. Number 9 was Aaron Shunk, and this was interesting. He was a second-round pick this last year out of Georgia, had a really, really strong debut, and really made an impression on some people. What was it about Shunk that you were hearing that made you feel comfortable running him up into the top 10 of this system right off the bat?
Well, I think you look at a young player that wasn't on a very good team, right? Boise struggled a lot, but he didn't seem to get distracted by that. He went ahead. He was able to put his type of a season together. He's one of those guys that has a personality that kind of draws the other players to him, as far as the intangible aspect of it. They were very, very comfortable with what they saw from him defensively, his reactions to things that happened in the field, and the fact that he hits the ball the other way hard. He doesn't bloop the ball the other way, but he can drive that ball to right field, and those are things they look for. And he stayed even when a team that wasn't playing well, and sometimes you'll see a guy at that point think that they're going to have to carry everything. He stayed very much within himself and strike zone awareness. He had a good feel for what was a strike and what wasn't a strike, and so they felt like to go to the higher short season level. I guess they call it short season A, right, as opposed to rookie ball. And to perform that way right out of the gate on a team that struggled, and not feel like he suddenly had to do more than he was capable of doing, he could still stay and play the way he was capable of playing. I think that that got them very comfortable with what they saw from him, and he was one guy that when you looked at reports from or talked to people from other organizations, that he was usually the first guy that got mentioned about the team. And with some of them, he was really the only guy they paid much attention to as far as position players were concerned.
The Rockies have a really, really good track record of successfully developing infielders. We've seen that in the major leagues. And you look at their top 10 right now, 7 of their top 10 prospects are infielders. We'll see how that continues to develop moving forward as they continue to look to add pitching, add some outfielders to the system. How do you kind of assess this top 10 in this system as a whole? Because you have that top-tier prospect in Rogers. Guys like Rolston and Tolia were first-round picks who have had some success. It's not the biggest eye-popping group, but you look 1 through 10, it's all guys with some draft pedigree who have, for the most part, performed so far in their minor league careers. Just what's your overall take on the quality of this system and where it stands today?
Well, I think if you look at it 2 years ago, you would say it was one of the top 5 or 6 organizations in the game, right?
Oh, absolutely. They were top 10 system for 4 or 5 years, and then they graduated those guys to the big leagues, which is exactly the point of this. They've had a great, great player development pipeline going for a few years now.
So I think they still have that young, they have those young players at the big league level, as we talked about earlier. Is this as deep and strong? No, but they've harvested a lot out of that system right now, and I think there's a confidence on their part they can rebuild it, because they do look from within to make the moves that they make. But it's at that zone of, okay, we've got to do some things, we've got to get some things going back in order, but we're okay because we're young at the big league level too. point, Rodgers will be there when he gets healthy, and you start looking around at the different situations. You know, that's where the versatility becomes such a key ingredient for what they're going to do.
Tracy, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be interested to see what the Rockies are able to do in 2020, if they can get back to that postseason level, and see if these young guys can come up and continue making a difference as they have for them. We appreciate your insight as always.
No problem. It's always enjoyable.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another edition of the Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Tracy Ringlesby, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening, everybody.